When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
I'm Alexander Chester, and maybe I'm not Rosa Parks, but I'm pretty important.
And I'm Av Sinensky, and Alex, you remind me of someone I detest.
Oh, I thought your line was going to be something about Chester boxing up those ribs. We got a very active Chester in this week's episode. Welcome back to Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss Season 12, Episode 2, The Lawn Jockey, which originally aired on February 11th, 2024, during the Super Bowl. Quite a decision by HBO. You know, for folks like you and I, of course, we made sure to rush to watch it after the Super Bowl last night. But don't you feel like their numbers are probably depressed going releasing it like in the middle of the third quarter of one of the most exciting Super Bowl finishes ever?
Yeah, I mean, I was more surprised at the decision to have Larry endorse Joe Biden in the middle of the episode. I mean,
yeah,
people have been predicting it for weeks, but yeah, they nailed it.
And they're all part of the deep state, you know. I will say, like, you know, as two ignorant white guys, based on the title of episode two, we spent a decent amount of time at the end of last episode of this podcast talking about like the racist history of the lawn jockey, but then like I didn't even know like if that was gonna be the topic of episode two, and so I ended up editing most of it out of the podcast because I was worried it was kind of like, you know, preachy and possibly way off base from Curb anyway. But now, given that this week's episode did touch on that exact topic, I kind of regret editing it out because it turns out that we did by mistake predict one of the major plot lines in this week's episode.
Yep, once again, the racists police our podcasts. Or the opposite. I don't know. Whatever it is. The podcast is ruined because of racism.
Yeah.
Very much a Rosa Parks situation on this podcast.
Yes.
But hopefully it'll be rectified.
And speaking of racism and Rosa Parks and all the rest, I'm just going to jump into it. Obviously, Joe DeAngelo bears a striking resemblance to Mocha Joe. But there was someone else to whom I thought he bore quite a striking resemblance. Did you pick up on that, or was that just me?
Who are you referring to? I don't know.
Mocha Hitler? The mustache? The haircut?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I thought Joe DeAngelo, as soon as I saw him on screen, he's a short little guy. He looked like he was going for – he looked more like Charlie Chaplin making fun of Hitler in The Great Dictator than Hitler himself. But, yeah, to me, I got strong Mocha Hitler vibes there. So, yeah, if you were guessing when Hitler's name would come up on the podcast, it's less than 5 minutes in this week. Should we jump right into the recap of?
Yeah, why don't we go forward with it? Let's jump into The Lawn Jockey, Season 12, Episode 2. And we continue pretty much right where we left off, right? We end off last episode with Larry being pulled away by the police, and we pick up with Larry sitting in a jail cell in a Georgian prison. Mm. And Larry seems to have struck up a relationship, a friendship with one of his fellow prisoners. Nothing unexpected about that.
Yeah.
He seems to have diagnosed Emmett's problems. Like he's feeling some discomfort. And Larry assures him that this is all being caused by dairy. You quit dairy, your problems will be solved.
Yeah. Now, given that Larry is an Ashkenazi Jew, it's very understandable why that's one of his default assumptions, right?
Right.
But much less prevalent among the common American white man?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is less prevalent. And we'll definitely see throughout this episode that this is something that will continue to plague Larry.
Yeah, now, I have another question. Why did Larry have to give up the Marcona almonds anyway?
Yeah, you wouldn't think those would have any dairy problem, but it could have been a different aversion.
Yeah, Larry explains that's what he had to give up, but he doesn't say why he had to give it up, so.
Yeah, it says they're very sweet. moist, soft, buttery. So maybe they, I don't know. Maybe there is some.
I don't like softness in a nut. I want the crunch of the nut. If it's soft, that means it's very stale. Soft is for a fruit, not a nut.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any soft nuts I like. Yeah, I guess not really. I guess you want a nut to be hard.
Yeah, that's what she said.
It is definitely what she said. Mm. So Joe DeAngelo comes to bail Larry out as he's, you know, explaining that, like, you know, I had to give up the Marcone almonds and the Camembert cheese and the Truffle oils.
Yeah.
And this guy's like has no idea what Larry's talking about.
Yeah.
So Joe DeAngelo comes, of course, played by Saverio. What's his last name? Guerta or something like that? Guerra.
Yes.
Same actor who plays Mocha Joe.
Mm-hmm. Now, we can't be meant to believe that he's like related to Mocha Joe, like his brother, right? It's not a George Foreman situation. So, is it just like it's just silliness, basically?
I think within the world, it's just silliness.
Okay, because it's not just the look, the voice, the mannerisms. I mean, they got to be the beans. At that point, it's over the top, right? There's got to be a genetic connection here.
Yeah, maybe they're separated at birth.
I think they were separated by a Nazi regime. Because again, I don't know what Joe DeAngelo was thinking with his styling here. But anyway.
Yeah. So
I have another question for you. How long was Larry in jail?
Well, it's a good question. We're gonna have to get into some of these tiny questions throughout the episode.
Yes.
I would assume well under 24 hours.
So I assume it had to have been, he got arrested, let's say, you know, 1 or 2 PM the day before. And then this has to be the next morning, right? First of all, for Jeff to be able to fly all the way out there is minimum 10 to 12 hours. And of course, it's daytime when he emerges, and it would have been nighttime if it was the same day. So I think it's got to be the next morning. And also, Morning Joe's on when they get to Susie's house, right? So it's between 6 and 10 a.m.
Right, right.
So yeah, yeah. I would say he was in jail for about 14 or 16 hours, which is quite a long time to, you know, to spend the evening in lockup for the violation of the statute. But
yeah,
anyhow, yeah. You need a better lawyer, Larry.
Larry and Mocha Joe DeAngelo both agree that the best strategy to end this quickly and painlessly is for Larry to just plead guilty, accept a slap on the wrist, and he'll be home by the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. While they're chatting, Larry's like, by the way, like, well, you know, I also have to have a separate claim against the South African businessman who, you know, brought me down here and then never paid me. And Mocha Joe was like, well, why don't we handle the criminal proceeding first, and then we can circle back and see if you have a claim there.
Yeah, Mocha Joe, focus on your business development skills here.
Yeah, seriously, the guy's handing you another case. Like, what do you do?
Like a billionaire.
Yeah. And he'll like sue someone for spite. So like he has no problem running up a bill.
Yes, yes. Well, we're gonna have to get into that later in this episode.
Yeah.
Because he indeed has no problem running up a bill. That is canon.
So we exit the courthouse, and Larry is very surprised to learn that he's become somewhat of a cult hero. There's an adoring crowd waiting for outside for him. Cameraman, paparazzi.
And you saw the GIF I was referring to last week, right? That Zach Brooks shared in the chat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. The indifference turning to happiness, kind of.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Larry has become somewhat of a liberal darling for taking a stand against this unjust voting restriction. And Jeff is there to greet Larry. He tells him that he's booked an Airbnb for him. All of his luggage has already been moved in, and everything is good to go.
Yeah.
And
why does Larry keep thinking that Jeff must hate dyeing his hair? Like, why would Jeff hate looking better and younger and less like a convicted sex offender?
I think he just knows that Susie's the one behind it. But yeah, I don't
sure, really but he insists that Jeff hates it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand we need to establish the hair dye for the root and lawn jockey issues to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's really all it is.
Yeah.
And here's where they both realize that this guy is the spitting image of Mocha Joe.
Mm, yeah.
And Larry's like, you know, the downside is that I have kind of a natural antipathy towards him just because of the resemblance.
I don't even antipathy is a strong enough word.
Yeah.
He's his mortal enemy.
He's one of his mortal enemies.
Yeah. Yes.
So we, you know, we start walking up the path to the house, to this Airbnb. And for the first of several times this episode, Larry will begin to rant and ruminate about this thing that he read or heard or saw. I don't even know where he got this from, but evidently Larry has learned that there's some sort of evolutionary development with the index finger.
Yes, and within just a few thousand years, totally yes, flat. Look at yours, Ob. Is it not flat?
No, it's not flat. Yeah, it'll because of the way we use it as a shoehorn, it'll develop into that shape over time.
Of course.
Jeff thinks this is bullshit, but they
and evolution famously only takes a couple thousand years. It's a very quick process.
It's very quick. Not as quick as the development against racist lawn jockeys in the South, because this Airbnb is still adorned by one.
Yeah. Okay.
Off-putting to Larry.
We got to get into this because this is enraging to me. First of all, as soon as I saw it on the lawn, I said, oh, even before they went inside, I said, and I realized, oh, that's this. I'm like, why not just cover it with a bag? That's like the easiest solution, right? But the fundamental premise of this entire episode makes no sense whatsoever. Susie says she gave them a security deposit. First of all, Jeff got this place for his client, Larry, who's paying for it. Now, maybe Susie booked it for him, even though Jeff has an assistant. But honestly, it doesn't make sense why she's here in the first place. Certainly, she wouldn't be responsible for the security deposit. And even if she was, Larry's obvious response would be, I could give a fuck about the security deposit. Money means nothing to me. One of the main premises of this show is the absurd amounts of money I will spend on a whim because I feel like it. If I feel like destroying this racist statue, I will do so happily and pay a couple $100 or a couple $1,000, and I won't even care. So the entire episode, like the threat of why they need to do it, it just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and like, I agree.
The doll is like the classic like callback here, where Susie threatens like Jeff and Larry to replace the doll head. But like in that case, the consequence wasn't money; it was Sammy. She is hysterical, and so yeah, that bothers me so much. And like that's really a running theme throughout this episode. Yeah. Is just like every awkward lawn jockey interaction that he has throughout the episode could be easily explained if he bothered doing so, right? Like the salesman at the landscaping store, the guy keeps saying, but you wanted one. Oh, but you already have one. Just explain your situation. You immediately get out of it. And like the best part of Curb is where Larry, in his own mind at least, is acting correctly and gets in trouble anyway. And this isn't that. This is he goes around shopping for something he doesn't want or need. And every time someone confronts him about it, he lets them think the worst of him without telling the truth. It's just it's very lazy and uncurbed to me.
I agree. Yeah, and I've, I have
that's
this,
my rant.
I have the same exact notes as you. I have written down, why is Susie even here?
Yeah.
And then I wrote, why doesn't the guy with unlimited money just eat the security deposit?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's a little
nonetheless, unfortunate. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, they're all, they all turn their attention to the Morning Joe segment, where much praise is bestowed upon Larry. He is compared to both Rosa Parks and Jesus in the same clip.
Yeah, and I think we need to do an early Ted Danson club here.
Would you stop with the Ted Danson?
Who's he?
He's somebody.
What about me?
You're nobody.
Why him? Why not me?
He's good. You're not.
I'm better than him.
You're worse. Much, much worse.
Pretty early Ted Danson club.
Yeah.
Although I think, oh, yeah, there's a number of them.
There's five of them right here in this scene.
Yeah.
So okay, let's start. So Joe, Mika, and Willie Geist. None of these people are in the Ted Danson Club.
I mean, for sure not Mika or Willie Geist. I don't even think Joe Scarborough is not either.
Yeah. He's very famous. He is not. Now, we have on their show, we have both Stacey Abrams and Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen, I say yes, for sure, no question. Put him on the list.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen, obviously, yes. I think Stacey Abrams, obviously, no.
So, so I think Stacey Abrams was a member from 2018 to 21. When she was like one of the highest profile political figures in the country. But like, although to political nerds like you and me, like we still know who she is, I don't think the average American has thought of her in the last 2 or 3 years.
I don't think the average American who knew she was even at the time that you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. So, all right. So and then Ted Danson is Ted Danson. He doesn't have ups and downs to that extreme. So you're saying even in 2018, she wasn't making it. In 2020, she almost single-handedly flipped the U.S. Senate.
I mean, whatever, but she's not a known figure.
Okay, fine. Let's go. Okay, so we've added one member in Bruce Springsteen. So Bruce Springsteen, welcome to the club. Your jacket is in the mail. Speaking of our newest member of the Ted Danson Club, did they like intentionally give Springsteen like a really terrible line? Larry, involvement, David. It's not funny. It's not smart.
Horrible.
It's just, it's nothing.
His middle name is involvement.
Yeah. Was this Bruce? Like, did he think this was funny and they were like too intimidated or like respectful to correct him?
Unclear. Yeah, no, that was a horrible, horrible line. Yeah, I would guess he probably, ad-libbed it and they just left it in because Bruce Springsteen. But yeah, it's not remotely funny.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bruce.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So what Jeff mentions to Larry that they have a Zoom call with Hulu scheduled for the next day.
Yeah.
But Susie immediately shuts it down because she's maybe this is why she came along, because she's because Jeff is going to go. And she's like, well, you're not going anywhere for my birthday.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to tag along. So maybe we could explain it that way.
Yeah. Well, but I have a slight canon issue here because we've seen Jeff and Susie over like 4 birthdays and we've never known her birthday to be so critical that he cannot travel. He cannot work. He must do nothing on her birthday except spend time with her. So I don't know. Maybe as she ages, she's birthdays come more important to her. She's got fewer of them left, perhaps.
Or she's like, if you're going to miss my birthday by going down to deal with your stupid friend, Larry, I'm coming with you, and you're spending the whole day with me on my birthday.
Yeah, but how is it a fun trip for her to be in some suburban Airbnb with the man she hates the most, Larry David?
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
That's not like a fun vacation for your birthday.
Yeah.
Although given her wealth and her access to things, I'm surprised how relatively modest Susie is in this episode, right? Like a pair of sunglasses from Sunglasses Hut she loves is a perfect present.
Well, she doesn't know it's from Sunglasses Hut, does she?
Listen, I'm not a sunglasses aficionado, but I feel like those who are could tell. She would want it to be a brand that she recognizes or something, right? Like she'd want to, be, you know. I mean, this is a woman who made her husband buy a house last time she caught him cheating on her. So,
right.
Yeah.
So Jeff confides into Larry that he's very stressed out. I need to get her a gift. She's very picky about gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, Larry's suggestion is like kind of interesting, except like if you're stressed out that like you don't know what to buy, then it's like, oh, now buy 2 things is like even more stressful.
Yeah.
Like, you're, like, 2 ways to screw up.
Yeah. Well, so it's bad if your solution is I have no idea what to get. It's good if your solution is I don't know how much to spend, because then you say you get 2 items at the lower price. But yeah, I do think Larry's idea has some promise to it. I once bought a girlfriend like a ridiculous present, which was like just physically, it wasn't that expensive. It was just physically very, very large. And I had to schlep it all around to get somewhere. And then we ended up breaking up before I even gave it to her like that afternoon. So, and she didn't ask me why I was carrying this enormous bag around. And then I just schlep the thing back. And so, I mean, I was happy to return it and save the money, obviously.
Right.
But so that was my zero gift idea.
Zero gift is a good idea. There should be no gifts.
Yeah. Now, what's your take on throughout this episode, Larry spritzing the water around the bathroom? Like, he's very concerned about leaving a scent. This is a new shtick of his, or?
Yeah, I didn't really understand what that is. Yeah, it's a weird thing. He's like, right, he's like doing this thing with his hands, with the water.
Yeah, and we got music.
Yeah, I like the music.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've seen Larry in other positions in the bathroom, obviously. The urinary stream causing Jesus to weep, for example. But yeah, here he's spritzing water. Like, he usually wants it to look as if no one's ever been there, is what he promises. But now there'll be, like, water all over the place.
Right. Yeah, he's leaving his mark. He's like the Wet Bandits.
Yes, exactly. So, So Larry has to go to the bathroom a lot in this episode, unfortunately. Drop the kids off at the pool.
Yeah, so Leon arrives, and boy, he is not happy to see this lawn jockey. He takes a stand. He demands that Larry and Jeff help him move it out of the way, which of course leads to them dropping and breaking the lawn jockey into pieces, which is going to be a big problem because the aforementioned security deposit.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Also, the way security deposits work is like you don't lose the entire security deposit. You should only lose whatever the value of the lawn jockey is, which anyway, if you go to replace, it's a wash.
Yeah,
so I don't really understand the purpose of this exercise.
If we're accepting the stupidity that is this argument or the plot line, I guess it would the value of it would exceed whatever the security deposit was. Again, we're talking a couple $1,000 here. It's not money that these people would care about.
So you're saying the lawn jockey is worth more than the deposit?
I'm saying that is possibly Susie's concern.
But then you're still going out of pocket to buy the lawn jockey.
Yeah.
So you're no better off.
Yeah,
you're worse off, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Susie's maybe Susie's afraid of her Airbnb rating going down.
But if you cover it, then it should
go
down. She used
her account. Yeah, but the owner might be pissed anyways. Like, yeah, you know, they broke my thing, and then they paid to bring me to replace it, but I still had to replace it, and then I had to go be racist and get in trouble again because I should be buying these things in 2024.
Fine, fair.
Yeah.
Punitive damages for making the guy look like a racist.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, my question is, like, how hard are these things to acquire? Because it seems like every single person in the rural neighborhood has one, but Larry never asks any of them where to acquire it. He just tries to buy them off each of those people secondhand.
Yeah, and we'll get to that, because it also makes no sense that he wouldn't be able to acquire one that way.
Yes, yes.
But, so they go to the store to, you know, do their various shoppings, And Larry's like, you know, he's spotted, he's noticed, everyone knows who he is because of the whole big news story. And Jeff decides that they should split up. He's going to go get sunglasses as gift number one, and Larry and Leon will look around for gift number two.
Yeah.
Leading Leon to wonder what type of bullshit you should buy for a person who already has all of this bullshit.
Well, it is the perfect Susie store. Everything looks like something Susie would wear.
Yeah. So they, you know, they start browsing, but Larry needs to do a big job. He's got to head to the restroom. And Leon's like, I don't know, be careful. The, you know, restrooms are really only for paying customers. You might get in trouble. Which this storyline also, whatever. I guess we'll go through it. Salesman comes over and, you know, Larry's like, oh, I'm interested in buying one of these hats. But before I do, can you point me to the restroom? And this salesman, you know, he susses out exactly what's going on here. He knows this is not a real customer. This is just someone looking for a toilet.
Even though he actually is a real customer looking to waste a bunch of money on some stupid person for Susie.
Yeah.
At a store where everything looks perfect.
Right. That's true. And, you know, he reluctantly points him in the direction of the bathroom, even though he suspects he knows what's up. Once again, Larry does this whole thing with the, you know, we talked about. And when they try to leave after Larry finishes up in the bathroom.
Well, it's because Larry immediately says, as soon as he comes out of the bathroom, he says, the salesman says, are you interested in it? And he says, no, I don't think so. And it's like, again, this is again Larry for no reason causing himself trouble. Like, he is there too. He has a job. He's looking for something for Susie. And he openly said it's a great Susie store. It just, I understand why they needed to drive the plot, but it just doesn't make sense within the logic of the scene.
Right.
Like, Larry should say, yeah, I'm looking for a piece of shit for my friend who likes all this ugly stuff you have here in the store. And in fact, that's what he ends up doing, and just randomly picking one, and it's perfect, Jeff says.
Yeah. Larry's defense is that he browsed with the intent to buy. He just wasn't, he didn't find anything interesting.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And also, no salesman would, like, be giving him this much of a hard time over this. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they understand that some amount of people
that's
are
a curb
use
thing, though. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine accepting that. Like, within the world, I'm fine accepting that conflict.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. And the guy's like, well, in your previous condition, how much would you have paid to use the restroom? And Larry's like, I don't know, maybe like $500.
Which is very honest of Larry.
Yeah. The salesman seems to believe that now Larry owes him $500.
Yeah.
Since he let him use the restroom.
Yeah. I mean, I would never answer more than $20 to that question under any circumstance. Maybe I've never needed to use the bathroom as much as Larry. Or maybe I'm a bigger liar than Larry. Or I just have less money than him.
Maybe you've never had as big of a job to do.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And if not, I've never dropped off that many kids.
Yeah, so Larry sees Jeff walk in, and Jeff's like, all right, I got the sunglasses. Like, what did you guys find? And Larry's like, that purse over there. And he kind of also, you know, he able to make Jeff happy, and now he's able to prove to the salesman, you see, I'm gonna buy something, I'm really a customer. And the guy's like, you're not a customer, this guy's a customer, you're just a guy who pooped in our toilet.
So
we get back to the house. Jeff goes back to the house by himself. I don't know why they split up here. We see Jeff hiding the gift in the treehouse. I don't know why he puts it in the treehouse. I don't know why he doesn't just leave it in his car. I guess maybe he thinks Susie will see it in the car. I don't know. Seems like a stupid place to put it. But again, we need something to make this work for the story. And here's where we have Larry remains at the shopping center to go looking for the lawn jockey at a gardening store.
Yes.
And he sees that there's a very nice selection of lawn jockeys in the store. The only problem is all of them are white.
Yes.
They're all the same ethnicity as Larry.
Yes.
Says.
Yes.
And the guy's like very good at just like playing dumb here, right? He's like, oh, well, I don't understand what you mean. Like, what is it that you're looking for? He's like,
but only because Larry's trying so hard by saying the worst possible things in every circumstance.
Well, he asks, like, do you have any that are a little bit darker? And the guy's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, you know what he means.
No, if somebody's being racist, make them be racist. Don't help them along.
He's like, do you have any that are black?
By the way, I had this exact scenario on an airplane once Alitalia, where the flight attendant said to me, you know, your colleagues, many of them are dishonest people. And I knew exactly what she was talking about. But I said, what do you mean, my colleagues? And she looked at me utterly confused, as if I didn't understand. She says, you know, the Jewish. So, no, you make them spell it out. Yeah.
You make them spell it out.
The Jewish. Those are my colleagues.
Yeah.
Yes. She went on to say that we lie and we steal.
I don't care for the Jewish.
Yes.
So the guy's like, you know, starts to, you know, raise an eyebrow at Larry, and this is where he's trying to explain, oh, I'm just trying to replace a broken one. Yes, exactly your point. If he just like coherently explains what happened, like, we're staying in this house, we broke it, we just like don't want to get in trouble, we have to replace it. I know that these things are, you know, ugly, but like, and racist, whatever. But you know, we're just in a jam, we don't really have any other option. But in the end, he decides to buy the white one and also inquire if they have any black paint or shoe polish.
Yes.
Now, you wouldn't want black paint. You would want brown paint, right? If you had black paint, it's not going to look like a black person.
Yeah, but they're trying to make it sound more racist. So, and also, I, you know, I'm not an expert on lawn jockeys, but maybe they actually use black rather than brown the way like blackface does also to sort of accentuate the race. I don't think the lawn jockey is going for verisimilitude necessarily, right? But I don't know. My issue is Larry says, like, later, the reason they have to use the hair dye is because he couldn't find a paint store. Leaving aside the fact that the store where he buys the lawn jockey looks like a Home Depot.
Right.
Home Depot is based in Atlanta. I looked it up. There are 90 Home Depot in Georgia, more than any other state.
Uh-huh.
There's no way there weren't multiple Home Depot around and open at this hour. For Larry to
probably in the very shopping mall where they are.
Yes, the very shopping mall he walked into. So yes, there's no way he couldn't find paint.
Yeah. So Larry brings the lawn jockey back to the Airbnb, and Jeff starts to freak out because Susie's going to notice that this lawn jockey is white and the previous one was not.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Larry comes up with the genius idea to use Jeff's hair dye to dye the jockey's face.
Yeah. Also, by the way, from a timeline perspective, this is the next day, right?
Next day compared to when?
The day when Susie told him to go replace the lawn jockey. It has to be because then Jeff gives her the present and suddenly it's her birthday.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
So. So because I am wondering, like, how long was Jeff planning on coming to Atlanta for? Because
that's think like 24, 48 hours. Right?
Yeah. Because he brought a lot of extra boxes for traveling for his hair dye.
Yeah. The whole thing makes no sense why any of them are here.
Yeah.
Also, even Jeff doesn't need to be here.
Wouldn't Jeff just get this done in a salon, not do it himself with hair dye in the bathroom?
You would think. So
my parents do give each other haircuts, which I think is very cute. They started during COVID and they just never stopped.
That's funny.
So yeah, my dad like colors my mom's hair. Well, now she's stopped. Now it's gray, but and cuts it for her. I don't know a lot of husbands who do that for their wives. I would not risk it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Susie arrives just as they're finishing up the paint job. Second paint job of this episode.
great one.
So Susie comes and she does a full inspection.
Actually, third, technically, but yeah.
And she decides, all right, you pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know, nothing to see here. Everything is fine.
Rudy will start sweating shortly, but not just yet.
But don't do any more stupid shit. Yeah. That'll definitely happen. and Larry starts telling Susie about the whole index finger shoehorn thing, which I have no idea where the real Larry David picked up this nonsense that he decided to build the episode around. And Jeff gifts the sunglasses to Susie, and she likes them. She's very pleased. She's very flattered. She's in a very good mood. And Larry seizes on this opportunity with Susie being so friendly to see if he can steal Jeff away for a couple hours. I know it's your birthday, but I have this really important thing. It's not going to take too long. And she agrees to let them go.
This is real life. You
know. What do you mean?
That's what Susie says.
Oh, this is real life. Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's acknowledging that her birthday is a bunch of bullshit.
Not as much bullshit as the bullshit in that bullshit store. He finishes up his
Or that bullshit magazine that Larry was reading.
But they make their big mistake because on the way out they return to the treehouse to grab the gift, and of course this Airbnb has this very sophisticated security system in place with cameras. And Susie,
I mean, listen, if you have racist statues, you probably need them because people are coming for them. So.
Yeah, so Susie sees them high-fiving with a box in their hand. She knows they're up to no good. The stupid shit has continued, and she's very, very suspicious.
Yeah. And it's actually much less bad than she's suspicious-sizing.
Yeah. So they
go back. I know the word suspecting. I sound like an idiot. I should clarify.
No, we can leave it. You can sound like an idiot. I'm okay
with that. I thought it sounded funny, but it came out dumb, so.
Yeah. So we go back to the shopping mall so that Jeff and Larry can return the purse. And the salesman is like, he can't even believe that Larry thinks that it's like acceptable for him to return this gift after the paint job that he did on the restaurant.
Yeah. Just don't say spite, Larry. Don't say spite. Don't say spite. Don't say spite.
This is the exact same storyline, right, with the crest jacket, where he he wants to get away with buying nothing, and he gets conned into buying this jacket that he is ridiculous for him to buy, that he would never buy and he would never wear.
But in that case, Elaine tells him that he loves it, right? The Jerry that she actually likes him when she wasn't supposed to. Here,
she throws him under the bus. Yeah.
Here, Jeff and Larry seem to earnestly like the jacket, which confuses me why then later on Larry will just give it over to Emmett.
Yeah, he does seem to like it, right? He says it's not something I would normally wear, but he seems to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's only $650, so at that price, who could complain?
Yeah.
They're basically giving it away.
I'm surprised it wasn't the exact amount that he said the paint job was worth.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It should have been a $500 item. Yeah. Yeah, this guy's getting a windfall.
That's interesting. $150.
All right. So we go pay a visit to Auntie Ray at her house, and she's very excited to see him. And she's being, I guess, not deposed, but I guess just interviewed by the lawyer. Joe.
Now, here's my problem. If Hitler Joe plans to have Larry plead guilty anyway and get this taken care of with a slap on the wrist, why is he wasting time at Auntie Ray's house?
I mean, I think you still want to have a basic understanding of the story before you march to court and put in a plea.
But then I guess my other question is, if he's the best, why is he always going around solo with no associates?
It's true. Well, he handles the most serious cases himself.
I suppose so. Yeah. For his top clients.
Yeah. He's not going to just, hand off this big public case to a senior associate.
Listen, interviewing Auntie Ray, that's the most important thing they're going to do in a day.
Yeah, so she is very upset to hear that Larry's plan is to plead guilty because everyone considers you a hero. I thought you were going to keep fighting with us to try to turn around this stupid law and get rid of it.
No, I'm a bit confused. Isn't the courageous thing to do to plead guilty, to say, yes, I did do this. Proudly, I broke this law because it's unjust. Saying not guilty implies that you're denying that you did it.
Right.
So I'm a little confused. The pride is getting arrested when you're getting into, quote-unquote, good trouble, as John Lewis used to say.
Yeah, he should suffer the consequences to prove to plead not guilty. Or maybe he's going to plead not guilty under some arguments of jury nullification. This is an unjust law.
But I just think they've flipped sort of what is traditionally seen as sort of the heroic act. The heroic act is to take the fall.
Right. Not to deny that you did anything wrong.
Yeah. Maybe the fall is a slap on the wrist because it's a silly, but anyway.
Yeah, and this is where we get...
But he needs the entire trial. That's what they want. They want the high-profile trial. They want the sting in the news. I guess that's the explanation.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Plead guilty and he goes away. Right. The story's over. And this is where we get Joe raving about the coffee, talking about the beans. He needs to know where she gets those beans. It's all about those beans. Larry, have you ever tried this coffee? You know about these beans?
What canon do we have that Auntie Ray even makes good coffee, right? Last episode, they talked about how bad her hors d'oeuvres were. I never remember great coffee being discussed in season 6 or season 7. And now it's so good that a snob aficionado like Hitler Joe, even he's raving about it. I'm very confused by this also.
Yeah. I had no idea that Auntie Ray was so busy with beans.
At least plant that last week when they're hanging out at Auntie Ray's house giving the bad hors d'oeuvres. Have her give it a good cup of coffee then.
Right. Yep.
Fine.
Yep.
Drop these hints.
I agree with you. This is a sloppy episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so we head back over to the Airbnb where Susie is waiting for them. And this scene is literally straight a carbon copy of The Doll. The music is the same. Her standing in the driveway as they arrive is the same.
The music is great. The music is great.
Yeah, this spaghetti western flourish.
Yeah.
And there she's like, I know you guys are up to no good. What's going on? I saw you with the gift. And they try to make up some story that the gift was for the lawyer, which is an absurd thing to claim. This is, it's probably some gift for some whore you have down here in Georgia. And she's like, I can't believe you ruined my birthday. She gets them all worked up. And between the anger and the heat and the arguing, the hair starts dripping down. Two different faces, that of Jeff and that of Arlong Jackie.
Yes.
And when she sees the dripping black dye coming from the black jockey, she realizes that they've done stupid shit once again.
And Larry realizes that the lawn jockey looks exactly like Rudy Giuliani.
Yes. No wonder he looked like an asshole.
Yes.
So I would say Jeff looks more like Giuliani, but.
No, but the face looks
I understand, but meaning the dye dripping, very much looked like him in that press conference.
Yes.
So yeah, so the three of them go on a wild goose chase trying to find a bland lawn jockey, but no one is willing.
I have a question here. How does Leon know Georgia so well that he can direct Jeff and Larry around the racist backwoods? Right, like Leon's from LA. His family is from New Orleans. Auntie Ray lives in Atlanta. I mean, maybe he's visited a few times, but he seems to know the area pretty well. And I asked this before, but why not ask any of these racist white people where they bought their statues instead of trying to buy them off them?
Yeah, but I would think any of these people would sell it to him for like the right price. I don't really
know, because he's all some libtard, you know, Yankee coming down to mess with our nice laws keeping black people from voting.
Election interference.
Yeah. So I like the one guy with the MAGA hat who yells at him, like that at least has consistency to me. They've seen this guy on TV and they don't like this guy. This guy's a Jew. Did you know that? Larry David's a Jew?
I did know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Larry finally has an idea. He's like, I know who can hook me up with a lawn jockey. That guy that I met in jail 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So he calls Emmett, whose number he still has. Hmm. And Emmett is so grateful for the
That was the first
Larry
assignment
gave
he gave his lawyer. Take down Emmett's number.
Yeah. He's like, you told me to stop doing dairy. Must have been 36 hours ago. And it has changed my life. I've been dairy free for a day and a half.
Yes.
Yeah, this makes no sense that like he's seen any sort of noticeable change based on, I mean, that guy was still in jail when Larry left.
Yes, exactly.
So he's now, I don't know how much time we're supposed to think past, but like we think it's
his life has
max.
Been changed. His
right.
life has
this
been changed.
This guy has been out of jail for probably 12 hours. So he skipped one meal.
Yet again, our notes are identical here. But my other question is, like, if Emmett is such a ne'er-do-well, like he's in and out of jail, how does he afford to own his own standalone home with its own standalone lawn jockey?
Oh, real estate is very cheap in the racist
I guess so.
Yeah. And for his trouble, Larry will give him the blue coat, the very blue coat that he just purchased earlier that day. So he gets
which
blue
again,
coat.
I thought he liked
he gets
it.
He gets a dairy-free diet. Things are all looking up for Emmett. What could go wrong from here?
Yeah.
So we head back over to Auntie Ray, where she's hosting a big barbecue. And
By the way, is it weird that we didn't hear anything about the results of the election?
Well, the election is obviously being contested because of Larry's interference.
Oh, I see. Okay. Seems like a bigger story. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing is in doubt. There's been fraud. There's been lying. Stolen election. So, yeah, they think they're just going to drop off Leon, but Auntie Ray, being the hospitable Southern lady that she is, she insists that everybody stay. Anyway, she wants to introduce him to the pastor. And as he walks in, everyone is so excited that Larry's here. He gets like a standing ovation. He's a folk hero. But Larry says he needs to use the bathroom first, because all of a sudden in this movie, Larry just has horrible diarrhea all the time.
That's
uncontrollable. So we cut over to Emmett at the liquor store, where he walks out and two cops, you know how those racist black cops are. They just see someone who doesn't look right.
Yeah.
They're out of place. He's wearing a coat that doesn't look like he could afford. So they obviously just arrest him.
Yeah. What is the probable cause here? Wearing a nice jacket?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Just like kind of a weird payoff of this whole Emmett thing that like he helps Larry and ends up back in jail.
So
maybe they're setting stuff up. I don't know.
I think Emmett might be coming back.
I would think so. Otherwise, his
last season, Larry met a friendly Southerner, and
he was very friendly.
Yeah, I'm not accusing Emmett of being a Klansman, to be clear. Just a collector of racist lawn jockey.
No, the only type of coat that we know he wears are blue coats.
Yes, that's true. Oh yeah, he's a blue coat, not a great coat.
Yeah, although he does know how to get a racist lawn jockey very quickly.
Yes.
So yeah, Jeff is really enjoying the ribs. Auntie Ray boxes some up for him. And this is when Larry comes out, and we got a whole sermon, not as big as the big halftime sermon, but big sermon nonetheless.
Yeah.
And he says that Larry should not change his middle name to Involved. He should change his last name to Daniel, because much like Daniel from the Bible, this Larry Daniel went into the lion's den knowing that it was dangerous, and he survived, and he's an inspiration to all of us.
I don't mean to tell this pastor how to do his job, but you didn't have to switch from David to Daniel. You had David right there. He went up against Goliath armed with nothing but a slingshot. That's the analogy. Why are you changing the name here? Terrible job.
Yeah. Yeah, terrible job. Yeah. He doesn't know his testament. Yeah. So Larry, is listening to the sermon, and the person who is boxing up the ribs for Jeff is heading over to his car to put them in the car for Larry. Very convenient.
Yeah. Well, hold on. What's this person's name?
Oh, Chester. This is Chester.
Chester. And I do have to say, like, Chester's mostly my two brothers and my mom, but Chester's in general, unfortunately, are known for opening up doors and entering places without knocking or first getting permission. Yes.
You've mentioned that.
And so, yeah. And so in that respect, Chester's entry to Larry's car is amazing because that's what the annoying Chesters do. But in the world of the show, it makes no fucking sense. First of all, the car would be locked, right? You don't, like, when you leave your car, you lock your car. And in fact, fancier cars automatically lock themselves. Even if it wasn't, why would Chester think it wasn't? Why would he go to the car with the ribs without first asking Larry or Jeff, hey, can I take these over to your car? And it's just like everything else in the episode, it's necessary for the narrative that they're trying to construct, but it doesn't make internal logic.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I forgot to mention before that the worker from the gardening center was Lionel Boyce. He's one of the chefs from the Bear.
Oh,
that
cool.
Was pretty cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Took a pretty minor role here.
Is he one of the people at the barbecue?
No, he's not at the barbecue.
When we get to the postman, we might have to discuss some of the barbecue guests.
Yeah, we'll get there. So. And that's when, yeah, so he, you know, the guy opens the door and this reveals to the whole party that there is a lawn jockey inside, and Larry tries to explain it away, but
well, he doesn't try. He just takes the L immediately.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he just kind of, like, you know, stutters.
And by the way, better than explaining it, just come up with a better lie. That's, like, you're Larry David. That's what you do, right? Like, I saw this disgusting racist thing on the way here, and I stole it because it disgusted me. And, you know, you compare me to Daniel, but you should actually compare me to Abraham because I will strike down this idol, or, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, so the upshot is that now Larry feels very torn about the situation. He wants to appease Auntie Ray and the community and not be this, wicked figure anymore. So we're at his trial.
Yeah, so we're at his trial of Larry fired Hitler Joe, but did not bother to hire a new attorney. He's showing up pro se, basically.
That's how it appears, that the judge just directly asks Larry how he wants to plea. And he's very torn, right? Because he wants to just plead guilty and move on. That was always the plan. But now, because he knows that Auntie Ray wants him to plead guilty, sorry, to plead not guilty and fight it, and because he's now offended Auntie Ray and all of her friends, he feels like this is very much reminiscent of, like, the Palestinian chicken ending where he's stuck between the two groups, except here the other group is himself.
Yeah. I mean, it just – declaring yourself not guilty without understanding the consequences, you know, without hiring a lawyer seems like a bad decision. But I will say that as many issues as I had with the episode, I do love the ending. I think it's a great cliffhanger and has me very excited to see what happens next. And whereas last week we speculated whether Larry was flying back and forth across the country multiple times, it seems like from the way this episode ends that we're going to be staying in Atlanta for quite a while.
I don't know if we're going to be staying or leaving and coming back. Trial will be in 90 days.
Yes. That was a setup for when we see the next week on, where we see that we're actually back in LA. Yeah. So we'll be coming back. Yeah, we're going back to LA next week for sure, but we will be back in Atlanta, maybe for the series finale, some people say, but we'll find out.
Yeah. One thing I didn't like about the way they framed this is that, like, if you want to make it that, like, Larry wants to just, like, take, you know, door number one, that's just, like, super convenient for him, and door number two is the one that's going to be challenging in order to, like, get into good graces, door number one is, like, he's pleading guilty for something that's punishable by up to a year in prison. Like, that's, like, no, not necessarily going to go great.
Yeah. My other issue is in the courthouse, we see Auntie Ray. We see some of Larry's suspicious new black friends. They are suspicious of him, not that they are suspicious themselves. But Jeff and Leon are nowhere to be found. Like, Jeff's sole role is to be the come with guy. He came all the way to Atlanta for this very reason. So their absence in the courthouse is a little bit strange.
Yeah, they bolted down as soon as Larry told them that he's going to, you know, stay to fight. They're ready to go home.
Yeah, but let's get to the ratings for this episode. Your rating and my rating, anyway. I thought this episode was funny, but exceedingly stupid for many of the reasons that I've noted throughout the podcast. On the positive side, we don't have any Maria, Sophia, or Irma. We get a lot more of Leon and Jeff and Susie, so that's all to the good. I can't get over the plot holes and the illogical behavior of the characters really bothered me, so I'm going to rate it higher than last week's episode because it's funnier, but not much. I put it 2 slots ahead of Atlanta. Atlanta was 99 last week, so now it drops to 100, and that puts the Lawn Jockey at 98, and that means that, yet again, like last week, I say that this episode was pretty, pretty good.
I am also down on this episode. I thought it was both nonsensical and also not that funny. They definitely had its moments, but certainly much less funny than a typical Curb episode for me. I maybe gave a little great inflation last week because it was a season premiere, but I am not returning that favor again this week. I am right along with you. I'm saying this episode is pretty, pretty good. 2 pretties. I think just like not a very strong showing this week. A lot of issues with the episode that we pointed out, both of us. And I really thought it was light on the laughs. I thought a lot of the behavior from our favorites is a bit cartoonish here, which can be funny. But in this case, I didn't even think it was all that funny. So a little disappointing.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Be a come with guy.
Who is your come with guy?
My come with guy, I'm going to go with the lawyer, Fake Mocha Joe. I thought that was like one bright spot of this episode was just seeing Mocha Joe come back, even if it was to play a different character, and building the plot line around the fact that he looks like Mocha Joe. I thought it was really great. And like Larry having a natural antipathy towards him because of that fact. I thought that was just like a delight. And I was like smiling every time that Mocha Joe was on screen. But maybe indicative of my feelings about the episode as a whole is that I didn't think there was a ton else there.
So what I'm hearing is you see a guy who looks like Hitler and you start smiling.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Because it's fodder for humor.
Yeah, none of it makes sense to me, but the plot is really driven by Susie. She comes along all the way to Atlanta for no apparent reason other than it's her birthday, which is a sacred day for her and Jeff, which we've never heard of before, the pretty scene in 24 years, of course. Her insistence on replacing the lawn jockey drives the plot. Her insistence that Jeff not do anything without her on her birthday, like she drives the whole plot. So I will say that Susie is my come with gal.
That's very interesting because
you're a fucking asshole. That's what you are.
I was going to say that Susie is the fucking asshole. Why are you even here? Why are you like giving everyone the third degree over nothing? Like nobody did anything wrong to you in this episode. You have been hanging out with these two stupid idiots for 20 years now, and you know what they're capable of. The fact that like he returns your second gift, like give me a fucking break. Like there's no reason why he has to hang out with you from morning till night on your birthday. Stop being so needy. And did I mention why are you even here? Why are you even here? When they accidentally break the racist statue, you should say, good, it's broken now. And when somebody says, well, what about the security deposit? You can say, they'll tell them they could go to hell with their security deposit. Instead, she's so worried about the racist homeowner getting back their, you know, racist statue that she embarrasses herself. It gives everyone else a hard time. Not a fan of it. It was kind of like, in my opinion, a waste of Susie almost to have her get this angry over it. It doesn't meet the test of Larry and Jeff antics to anger Susie the way she gets in this episode. So was not a fan of that.
Now, where is she a bigger asshole than Eileen Salatara for you, who's still our title?
Of course not.
Yeah, of course not. LOL is the worst. Yeah. I'm going to do something that I've never before done on this podcast. To be clear, as we all know, I obviously love Larry David. I love Jeff Schaefer, a Hall of Fame guest on this podcast. Larry, as Michael Fauché said last week, a childhood hero of mine. But they are credited with the story in this episode. Jeff is the director of this episode. And so I'm going to call them the fucking assholes because I was just so frustrated by all the issues in the episode. They distracted me from what I thought was a very funny half hour viewing experience. I hope this designation doesn't risk Jeff coming back on the pod or bringing Larry back with him. But listen, if I'm not being honest here, what are we doing with this podcast? So,
like to welcome our special guest, Jeff Schaefer.
Yeah, he has just turned off his Zoom and left. Unfortunately, I've made a big mistake. So that's where I'm going. I love them, but yeah, just disappointed by some of the plot holes in this episode of.
Okay. All right. She's fired.
Postman! Postman, come here! Tell the neighborhood! Right, what a shanda, Larry! Larry David! You're a lousy Jew! But you're a lousy human being! He screws the wife of a man in a wheelchair! A shanda!
Maybe you should have given me some candy. You're a lousy Jew!
So, Av, before we get to the postman, or for the postman, I should say, we have a very special guest with us.
We do. Very special indeed.
Hey, I'm Kalila Harris, and I love cheese.
Who doesn't?
So, welcome to pretty good, Kalila. Brooke, or, you know, it's presumptuous for me to say Brookie, so you can tell.
By the end of the podcast, she will be Brookie for all.
Yeah. So, let me ask you a question, and we're gonna take a step back in a second. But I had a wild theory on IMDb last week. I don't know if you know this. The assumption we all have is that your character's name is Brooke, and those who know her closely, they get to call her Brookie. On IMDb last week, your character was listed as Brookie Brooke. So I had the wild theory that actually her name is Brookie Brooke, but she prefers that people who don't know her well call her by her last name. But my theory was nipped in the bud because on IMDb, it's now listed as Brookie / Brooke. So, yes.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back and tell us, you know, how you got cast on the show and sort of the background of how that came to be.
Oh, so I got cast kind of randomly because I actually did not audition for this role. I auditioned for a role, I think, that was out maybe 3 years ago or something like that, close to 3 years ago, didn't get that role. And when this role came up, the producers, Jeff told me the story. He said, you know, I feel like for that
Schaefer or Garland?
Schaefer.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Told me, you know, I'm pretty sure in that batch of people, I remember there were some people we really liked that we couldn't use necessarily, but I'm sure Brooke is in there. So they went through those old audition tapes from like 2-3 years ago, and mine was in there, and they reached out. I wasn't expecting it. I'm living my life here in Nashville, teaching, whatever. And next thing I know, my manager from LA calls, and they're like, hey, are you available on these dates? I'm like, I can be. and it's like, well, you booked Curb Your Enthusiasm. I was like, what? What are you talking about? So it was a very pleasant surprise.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you remember what the other role was?
Ooh, I don't. I should have had that. But no, I don't remember what it was.
Mm. The actor who did it was okay, but I felt like there was something missing. So, yeah.
She was awesome.
A certain charm and intimacy of closeness that just wasn't present.
Yeah. She came off as more of a Brooke than a Brookie. So now here you are. You find yourself in Atlanta, hanging out at Michael Fauché's party. In your imagination, how does Brooke know Michael? Because she's pretty close with him.
Right. Michael and I are pretty close. Well, you know, we've met through friends, and he is a philanthropist, as is Brookie. And I think our hearts just kind of aligned on the making, wanting humanity to be improved by actions that we take and the way that we live. And I think that we connected on that. And he's fun. So, I'm fun too.
The other question Av and I were wondering last week is Brooke a fan of young Larry, or is she really only going up to Larry out of, you know, obligation to Michael because Michael asked her to?
Brooke is kind of, I wouldn't say indifferent, but glad that he's there on her friend's behalf. So anybody who's here for Michael, I'm going to embrace and say, hey.
Well, semi-embrace.
But not inherently interested.
Embrace from a distance. Yeah.
Is this something that you have encountered in your life ever with the two-tiered naming system for certain people?
I don't. You know, yes, I have encountered it. And in that case, I was in Larry's position because I did not feel, except I did not venture to say the nickname. I just didn't. I knew that we weren't well ingratiated enough for me to use it. So I just refrained. But I didn't. It kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. Although, I mean, I knew we weren't close, but other people were using it around and I was just like...
We're not there yet.
Makes me know what I'm missing in this friendship. It's fine.
So let's move from episode one to episode two. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you were at the barbecue in episode two, right? At the church barbecue.
I was at the barbecue. There was some stuff that was edited out.
That's what we figured.
Yeah. So because Brookie has these two random white guys who she's friends with last episode, but now she just happens to go to the same church as Auntie Ray. It seems like. First of all, it's a level of familiarity that Larry should have earned Brookie privileges, but it's also like, you know, a thing that probably should have come up, you know.
Right. Well, yeah. Had we been able to see those missing scenes, there was a truce. And
I see.
There was an allowance and an enthusiastic invitation to come to the picnic, as you know.
I was telling off my theory was that Brooke comes up to Larry at the cookout and she says, hey, now that you're a hero for the resistance and you know you're standing up against these ridiculous anti-voter turnout laws in Georgia, right, now you can call me Brookie. But then she sees the lawn jockey in the car and she says, now it's Brookie, you asshole.
That would have been a great episode. Again, that'd be great.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like they should have used you a bit more in this episode. I feel like there was a great callback opportunity there that for whatever reason they missed.
You know, I felt like even though I knew what was missing, I was like, well, was it necessary for the storyline? Not really. It would have been nice, but I do like how they did kind of work everything else in there and have everybody going around, you know, how they have to run errands, etc., for the double gifting, whatever. So
yeah,
it was like, you know, you probably would have had to lose some of that. So, you know,
yeah,
it was awesome.
Over here on PPPG, we look at the episodes through a Brooke centered lens. So we were very upset that something was clearly cut out. I thought that somehow you had hit something up with Leon because
you're standing right next to him. He's a ladies man.
Out with the party. So we figured there was something cut where like it turns out like after Larry gets kicked out of that party, Leon is like left there at the party with you, and you know, and like Larry wakes up the next morning and there you are with Leon or something like that.
Well, Leon was interested in Brookie. Leon got to call me Brookie. So, you know.
Leon is going straight to Brookie status.
So there was a date, but that was cut out. So, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so we
nailed
it. We know the show.
Okay, good. All right. So Leon and Brooke are I wouldn't say an item because Leon tends to stay with any one woman for too long.
Of an item as the time allowed for him to be in Atlanta.
Yeah. Although, you know, we don't know exactly, but chances are he might be coming back for a trial of some sort later on this season. So maybe there's another chance for Brooke.
Yeah.
Curb getting political. I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene was very upset on Twitter today. Do you think that Larry David might end the political divide by the end of season 12?
Yeah. I was at the season the season that starts with the MAGA hat episode. I was at the premiere of that season. Was that season 10, I think?
Ooh, nice.
And Larry was asked on stage, are you worried about turning off some of your Trump fans? And his response was, I could give a fuck. And I'm guessing that's his response to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Doesn't strike me as a huge Curb fan, by the way.
Mostly.
But yes.
Yeah.
She's found something that made her upset.
Yeah, shocking. Yeah.
She's a fan of getting upset.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, there are those people who like to pick things and, you know, that's their entertainment, getting upset about things. So.
Yeah,
a show centered around Hollywood Jews doesn't strike me as Marjorie Taylor Greene's favorite topic anyway. So
I would imagine. Probably. Yeah,
maybe we have space lasers coming pretty soon. all right. So Khalil, with your permission, we're going to jump into our postman. We have some emails from some of our listeners and maybe you can help us answer them or respond to them.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
And then we have some categories and ratings to end things off.
Yeah.
So first we are going to hear from Raj Krishnan, who says he had no idea about lawn jockeys or the significance of watermelon to African Americans before watching the show. So there you go. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Educational show.
Educating us about race relations. Yeah, maybe not always in the most direct way, but, you know, circuitous.
If he was interested and then looked it up, then yes. Absolutely.
Yes. As a starting point. Yeah. Don't end your education with Curb.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wasn't necessarily familiar with the lawn jockey thing. Although as soon as like I saw it, I was like, that doesn't look
doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's something you're supposed to have on your lawn. I also knew even less about Jewish American culture before watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, which we've learned a lot from this show as well.
I assume this is Raj talking, not you, Hav.
This is Raj, yes. I know about Jewish culture. I learned about it from other shows. He says that the asshole is a combination of Susie and or the scorekeeper for making a big deal about using the restroom. I didn't care much for the index finger story that Larry said more than once during the episode. Yeah, Kalila, you have any insights onto this?
The story about how the, I don't know, evolution is happening and it's going to look like a
yeah, are you concerned?
At some point. Well, I thought it was interesting. I didn't look it up to see if it was actually true. You know, Larry's very creative. I would not be surprised if this was his own inkling that that could be part of what's happening to human culture. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think I read on, I think it was AV Club or one of the reviews I read. They said that it's completely made up. Like it was just something that Larry came up with.
Well, he read it in a Bullshit American.
Yeah. I don't even think Scientific American is even a real magazine. They broke down the whole thing. By the way, it happens to be my birthday today. I don't know if that's today or the day he wrote this email, but either way, happy birthday, Raj.
Happy birthday.
So, February 12th. So that was yesterday. Oh,
and that's my new niece's birthday also.
Oh, there you go. Happy birthday to her. What's her name?
TBD.
Okay.
Yes. All right. My brother told me they've narrowed it down to two options, but I'm not going to break the news on this podcast.
All right. So new baby Chester, yep. Susie, Raj, and Abraham Lincoln all share a birthday.
Oh, wow. What a list.
The scene where all the people at the party see the lawn jockey at the end is reminiscent of a previous episode where Larry was in the doctor's house and that lady called him a racist for not hiring her. Yes, that's very early on. That's, I think, affirmative action.
That's season two, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the first. It's an early episode. He says, good episode. None of them are really doing it for me so far. Maybe 2.5 pretties. He says, P.S., the phone number that the guy gives Larry that he meets him in jail is a Home Depot in Georgia on Ponce de Leon Avenue.
No way. On Ponce de Leon, actually?
Nice. Yeah, that's what he says.
That's amazing. Why didn't Larry go there to buy the paint so he didn't have to use the hair tie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good question. Because then we wouldn't have gotten the Giuliani payoff.
Yeah. Kalila, we looked it up. There are 90 Home Depots in Georgia, more than any other state. So
yeah.
I feel like Larry could have found some paint.
Store.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm from Alabama. Yeah. And although I didn't spend a lot of time in Georgia, more than I did probably in California in the time that I was living there. So I was like, there's definitely paint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next we have Alex Orvitz, who says this was a weird one since maybe I chuckled just once at Larry attempting to spray soap in the air each bathroom he went in. But the episode still worked a bit better for me than the first one of the season. I guess it was more focused on plot than humor. I give it 3 pretties. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. At least we had the return of Mocha Joe.
Yes. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Hold on. So is Alex implying that Joe D'Angelo is literally Mocha Joe and just pretending not to be?
Within the world. He's really Mocha Joe and he's pretending to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Or maybe Mocha Joe quit the coffee business and went to law school.
But then we'd have to assume he'd be sabotaging Larry. Right?
Well, maybe he was playing the long game before he gets fired.
Yeah.
This could be like a Better Call Saul situation.
Mm, yeah. Put some glasses on, slick back your hair, and Larry will never notice.
Yeah. He says that the fucking asshole is the sales guy. The come with guy is Emmett, who is willing to steal from a church to help Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about having the lawn jockey outside a church is like particularly
precious. Yeah. That does not sound like a great church.
Yeah. Okay. Zach Brooks saying, trying to appreciate Curb, but this episode was a little blah. Another week, another Leo pointing gif when the hair dye starts dripping. Wonder if we're staying in Georgia for the whole season. 3 pretties.
Yeah. Kalila, let me ask you, because Av and I are very much not from the South, and you might have more insight into this. Are lawn jockeys still a thing, like on people's lawns in 2024? You know, in sort of the more racist rural areas.
Most likely, yes. In rural areas, rural America, Southeast region, probably.
Yeah.
I'm saying probably because I tend to not spend time there. I tend to avoid those areas.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised.
Well, listen, if they have Confederate flags still up there, I'm sure they probably have lawn jockeys.
They definitely have those. They definitely have those.
Yeah.
Which is funny because the Confederacy lost, but whatever.
Yeah. Funny's not the word I'd use, but yeah.
Oh, so the I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for lawn jockey. So apparently the thing in Home Alone, the statue that gets hit, they're categorizing that as a lawn jockey as well.
Oh, really?
But that's like a completely different thing than this.
Right. It was like concrete. It looked more like a fountain of sorts to me, even though there was no water element.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm confused now by this whole thing. But I'm definitely, definitely what we saw on the lawn is not ideal. He says that the come with guy is the guy from jail with a jockey, and the fucking assholes are the racist with the lawn jockeys.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, okay.
Okay, Olin Allen says, much more tightly plotted. Don't recall any major open plot holes like Leon and the cake. Maybe that Brookie had a very quiet return, which we've covered. Mm. Reasonably well structured as well, but maybe I was in a foul mood, but I just didn't find anything particularly funny in this one. Oh, Stacey Abrams was quite decent, but the Bruce Springsteen part was awful.
Yeah.
Oh, Larry, you didn't like Larry involved David?
Involvement, David, yes. Larry gets two nicknames in the episode, right? Because the pastor calls him Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a little better than involvement.
Larry Daniel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boy, these postmen are really not super pumped about episode two here, it sounds like.
Olin gives the episode 1.5 pretties.
Ooh.
He says his come with guy is the lactose intolerant jailbird. Yeah. And the fucking asshole is the officious clothes salesperson.
Mm. Yeah, that guy's taking a hit here also in the post.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
But hey.
Yeah.
You're just the friend who pooped in our bathroom.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I would never go into a store under false pretenses just merely to use the restroom. Yeah. No one would ever do that. It's something so horrible.
Yeah. George made an app for that in the Seinfeld reunion.
That's episode. Right. That's right. Yeah. Obviously, this is a thing people need. And we end off our postman, as always, with John Gormley, who says, hello, Alex and Av. First of all, I was completely wrong in my anticipation of this episode. Suspected they may have scheduled a weaker episode along the Super Bowl. Plus, the second episode of the last few seasons have more basically been duds than otherwise. But no, this episode was fantastic in every classic Curb way. So, John, high on the episode. The story felt focused on two or three straightforward plots and scenarios, which all connected pretty well. Susie's birthday has changed from late January to early February, as it was in season 10, to early November, as it seems to be here.
Wait, hold on. So, great job by John. So, John has actually caught. So, we did have a Susie birthday in season 10.
Yeah, but why did someone else say it was February 12th? Was the same.
Well, the episode aired on February 11th.
Oh, okay. So he's going to be.
But
yes,
but the birthday's obviously November because the election. Yeah.
Right.
November in the world of Curb. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe she's celebrating quarter birthdays.
Yeah.
Like a 5-year-old. I love the scene trekking through the back roads of Georgia with the banjo jamming some new Curb music. Comes after a nice return of the Larry and Jeff versus Susie face off, which hasn't been seen since early Curb. You'll probably mention it, but there's presumably a deleted scene with Leon and Brookie from the barbecue as she's there, but doesn't do anything.
Wow. These people are on top of it.
Yeah, everyone noticed you.
Yeah, because we didn't announce this as a guest here, so people just people really freeze framing there in that barbecue and really noticing. I mean, you are standing right next to JB's move, like pretty probably right in the middle of the scene there.
Yeah. I wonder if the lawyer is actually Mocha Joe doing some huge scheme troll against Larry, which will crop up later. If not, it's still a hilarious part of this episode and clever way to bring him back without digging up that plot again. I mean, I thought there was something just like so simple but genius about just like, let's just make him a different person and roll with it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the payoff of some setups from last week, especially the hair dye gag. Come with guy goes to Larry, was originally going to give it to Jeff, but Larry seems to be more of the come with to his problems rather than vice versa. Helping buy Susie's gift and buying another item from the store after Jeff returned his, fixing the lawn jockey, giving the jacket to someone, the ex-prisoner, then later supporting Auntie Ray and her fellow activists and pleading not guilty. Fucking asshole is the store salesman. He's really, he's getting the bad side of things this week. Four pretties. This was a top tier episode, according to John. Which then begs the question, Kalila, how do you rate this episode on a scale of 0 to 5 pretties?
0 to 5 pretties.
And half pretties are allowed.
Biased or unbiased?
However you'd like.
Biased.
Biased, yeah. Most of our guests usually go for biased.
Yeah.
Five pretty.
Yeah. Listen, the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that I was in is a very good metric for whether or not you like.
Perfect. Yeah.
Very fair.
What about you guys? What did you guys?
And wait, and then who is your come with guy or gal? Do you give it to Brooke with her somewhat limited role in the episode, or is there someone else who you want to call out here?
No, I'd have to say Yeah, the jailbird is the come with guy. He was very supportive.
Emmett.
Yeah. And the fucking asshole. Fucking asshole. This episode. Oh, I love Susie, but I think it was her.
That's what I said. I had Susie as well.
Yeah. Susie's frequently an asshole.
Yeah, but she's yeah. Yeah.
All right, ops.
Well, I don't know how official any of these rankings really are.
So what is our cumulative rating, taking into account that we had some negative ratings from some of our listeners, but a 5 from Kalila.
Yeah, so Kalila gave it a 5. Alex and I both gave it a 2. We were both pretty down on this episode.
We needed more Brookie.
Yeah, we need more Brookie. That was our major complaint. With our audience score of 2.8, that averages out roundly to a 2.95. So, you know, right in that meaty part of that curve, solid middle of the road episode. That's going to rank it somewhere, you know, around the 80th episode. So for some reason, my spreadsheet is not working right now. So I'm just estimating. It's about the 80th episode. So, you know, around the halfway point of the season 3. Very nice, solid episode overall by that metric. Anything else that you'd like to share with us about your experience on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Not mad. Well, I just want to say about this, average is good enough. Remember that, children. If children are listening, they probably don't watch. Anyway.
a lot of cursing if this is for children.
True. Yeah. I just had a really good time. And I knew from the beginning, I was like, okay, my expectations, that is going to be the time of my life. And it was so much fun just being there. Everybody's clowning, having a great time, and just having the opportunity to talk to masters in comedy, have a master class of sorts, and just be there and seeing people who've done this for a very long time just be excellent at what they do and you know, inspiring. So I would say 100%. It was an overwhelmingly positive experience, and I was sad that we had to wait so long, but, you know, breaks are pretty normal with Curb, so.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah, I'm sure the strike and all that stuff or sort of stuff probably didn't.
Oh, yeah. Do y'all think this is really the end? Or are you not buying it?
He's buying it more than me. I'm overall buying it. I think that HBO probably wouldn't promote this as the final season if they weren't very confident that it was. And you have Larry telling everyone who will listen that this is it. But then you have Jeff Schaefer saying, oh, Larry always says this is it. And then he thinks of a new idea and we do another season. So I would never say never, but I do think overwhelmingly likely it is it. I think Alex is 100% case closed for sure. It's it. So,
okay.
Yeah. I hope I'm wrong, but yeah, not overly confident that,
yeah. How about you?
I believe them. I mean, I believe them. Yeah.
All right.
Don't you hate to be continueds on TV? I mean, the whole reason you watch a TV show is because it ends. If I wanted a long, boring story with no point to it, I have my life.
All right. So next week's episode, called Vertical Drop, Horizontal Tug. That sounds almost like the move that Jerry teaches George in Seinfeld.
What's it? Vertical drop, horizontal tug?
Yeah. Do you have a headboard? Is it padded? let's watch this trailer. It seems from the trailer we're back in the house in L.A. The whole episode seems to take place in L.A. So, you know, the cliffhanger at the end of this episode looks like we're staying in Atlanta. But I guess we're going back to L.A. and we'll have to come back to Atlanta at some later point. So.
The brain and the balls are related. You see a magnifying glass and you put it on your balls? It's the same pattern as the brain. So like people say, I'm thinking what you'll get.
Every now and then you say something so stupid, but it actually makes sense.
Of course it makes sense.
I threw my ball away. I gotta take a drop.
You're not dropping.
Can't drop.
I'm dropping.
You're not dropping.
Oh, I'm dropping.
You are not dropping the ball.
Not you.
You're a cheater.
No, you're a cheater.
It's some of the best sex I've ever had in my life.
Do you give her a climax?
Well, I don't know.
How would you not know?
I don't ask.
Do you smell musk? I release a lot of sex musk, don't I, Larry?
How would you know?
All right. So, yes, we're definitely back in L.A. So I don't think Brookie is close enough with Leon to be traveling back across country yet. But we have to come back to Atlanta at some point. We have a trial coming, right?
There's a trial. I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited though. We're back in LA. We're gonna have you know, Cheryl's gonna be back, and Ted, and a lot of our beloved characters. Richard, it looks like he's gonna be back as well. So it'll be a little bit of a classic Herb after we start in Atlanta for a couple episodes here. And Brookie, Kalila, thank you, Brooke. However we can call you at this point.
Brookie.
We've got Brookie privileges.
We made it. Yeah.
Kalila, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
so much. We hope to see you again, maybe back in Atlanta or otherwise.
Or we'll elsewhere, see. Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
We certainly will, but this was...
Get a life, Jews!